everyone, and welcome to Hollywood Soup. I am Dizzy D, and thank you for tuning into Penguin Radio to hear all about entertainment news, celebrity gossip, new movie releases, and popular music. I have a lot of fun things in store today, including my segments called Movie Monday, True or False, The Dirty Deets, and Toons Talk. I hope that you're ready because this is the start of an exciting show, so I will now jump into my first segment, Movie Monday. So, this weekend, I saw the movie This Is Where I Leave You, which is based on a book written by Jonathan Trooper, who also wrote the screenplay, and this film was directed by Sean Levy, who has also directed movies such as Big Fat Liar, Just Married, and Date Night. So, I wanted to go see this movie because there's so many good actors and actresses in this movie, including Jason Bateman, Tina Fey, Jane Fonda, Connie Britton, Rose Byrne, Dax Shepard, and just all these amazing people. I felt like I would be missing out if I didn't go see this movie because they're all so talented. So I didn't even see the movie trailer. I didn't even really know what it was about. I just knew I wanted to see it, and I went into the movie theater knowing that it was a comedy, but other than that, I had no idea what to expect. So in the beginning of the movie, we see Jason Bateman's character named Judd, and he's pretty much the main character of the film. So we see him, he's going to work, and he actually worked in a radio studio, and I think he was the technical engineer or something, and I was like, hey, I'm going to talk about this on the radio tomorrow, but it was funny. But anyways, his boss is the big-time radio personality who's played by Dax Shepard, and his name is Wade, and he's kind of rude, but Judd, he's planning on getting off work early, and he got his wife a birthday cake because it's her birthday that day, and he was going to go surprise her when he got home, but he told his boss, and he was just kind of rude, and he was like, oh, I'm going to go home and sleep, like just kind of not very nice about it. And then so Judd goes home and he walks into the house with the birthday cake and the candles are all lit and everything. And he walks into the house and he hears something in the back room. And so he walks in and his boss is sleeping with his wife and he's just staring at them and is like, what is happening right now? So he sits down on the chair in the bedroom and just watches for a second, and then they realize that he's there and they turn around and it's so awkward, but I felt so bad for him, but it was really funny. And he shows no emotion at all. And he's like, how long has this been happening for? And his wife, you know, in movies, how two characters say something at the exact same time and they both say the wrong thing. Well, he said it just this once. And then she said, for a year. So she was telling the truth. They've been, you know, sleeping together for a year. And I don't know. That was basically that beginning of the movie. But then after all that happened, Judd gets a phone call from his sister named Wendy, who is played by Tina Fey. And you see her standing in the doorway of a hospital bedroom, and you can see her father, it is her father, in the bed, and her mother, played by Jane Fonda, is holding him. And Wendy was telling her brother on the phone that their father passed away. So long story short, there's four siblings in the family, and their mother tells them that it was their father's dying wish to have them at the house and stay there for 7 days, which is a part of Shiva, which is a Jewish tradition where they mourn a family member who's passed away. And they all were kind of confused to why they were doing this, because they don't really practice any traditions and they don't really get along or anything. And they all live in separate places, so they don't, you know, talk all the time or anything. So they were just really confused. And basically it was very chaotic, all of them being under one roof. So throughout the movie, we see each sibling have their relationships with each other as well as the relationship they have with their spouses or their girlfriends or their boyfriends or whatever. So we see Judd, the main character, and his sister Wendy really bond because they always go on top of the roof and just sit and talk to each other. And we really see that relationship form. And then we see how much the two brothers, Philip, played by Adam Driver, and Paul, played by Corey Stoll, they fight with each other constantly. And then we learn how Paul's wife used to date Judd, so there's kind of a feud between them. Then also we see Wendy and her workaholic husband. They can't really find time for themselves, and he has to leave the house early because he has to go back to work. So there's kind of a argument there. And then we see how their son has it more put together than they are. He's like 2 or 3. So, and then Paul, who is the oldest son, and his wife are having trouble having kids. So there's a frustration between them. And then Philip, who is the youngest brother, he brings his new, much older girlfriend to meet the family for the first time. And he's kind of judged as the troubled boy who just makes mistakes a lot. And he's basically living off of his girlfriend's money because she's a really successful psychologist, I think. And that's how they met, was he was getting therapy and then they ended up falling in love. So that there was kind of a weirdness between that when the family found out. But anyways, we already know that Judd's wife cheated on him. But when people asked about her, like, where is she at the funeral, he would lie and say, oh, she had an accident and she couldn't be here, like, blah, blah. And obviously he wasn't telling the truth, but his sister totally knew and pretty much pried it out of him to tell the whole family. And he did in a very open way. It was very loud. But anyways, so that happened. And then throughout the movie, we also see the relationships form within the family. And I thought it was interesting because they have, you know, there's 4 siblings and they all, you know, have stuff within each other. And the reason I thought it was interesting is because I was pretty much raised as an only child. I have a half sister, but she's 10 years older than me. But I was just raised in a, you know, an only child household. So just watching their family dynamic was interesting to me because I have a big extended family, but we don't really fight or anything. And sometimes I fight with my parents, but we just bicker. It's not anything huge or drastic or anything. So I really liked how we saw this family fight. But then when it came down to it, they all loved each other so much and they would stick up for each other if they needed to. And it was just really cute. It was a really good movie. And they, at the end, they basically realized their true happiness for each other. And then they figure out different aspects of their life, like if their other relationships aren't working out, they're like, oh, I should probably fix that. And then, but overall, I guess this movie didn't get a lot of great reviews. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 43%, and Rolling Stones gave it a 1.5 stars out of 4. So I thought that was kind of weird, but other than that, I thought it was such a great movie. It was really funny. And pretty much throughout the whole movie, there's different things that I've never really would expect to happen. And yeah, so I really liked it. So that was Movie Monday, and I hope you enjoyed it. Tune in for next week on Penguin Radio to hear what movie I decided to go see and review. So when we come back, I will start my true or false segment, but we will be back after this short break.
Myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. and my scars remind me that
you're listening to radio.dominican.edu. Welcome to Bosco's Breaks. The sudden death last month of 63-year-old comedian and actor Robin Williams was ruled to be suicide by Marin County authorities. While suicide was the event that ended Williams' life, the why behind the event is complex. Williams' publicist, Mara Boxbaum, released a statement that Williams had been seeking treatment for severe depression. The word suicide can leave the impression that it is an individual's choice or decision to die. Dr. Stephen Ilardi, author of The Depression Cure and associate professor of psychology at the University of Kansas, has found that because depression is such a misunderstood condition, there are a lot of people who have little sympathy for those who resort to suicide. Ilardi says depression is a mental illness, not a lifestyle choice. Like cancer or any other disease, it is unavoidable, but unlike cancer, it is more often than not a hidden illness. According to Save.org, a website devoted to suicide awareness, suicide takes the lives of nearly 40,000 Americans every year, making it the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. Considering that one person takes their own life every 14 minutes in the U.S. alone, experts say there's clearly much more to discover about the brain's processing in order to battle the illness and stereotypes surrounding it. Although Williams' suicide was both shocking and heartbreaking to many, it signifies the challenges involved with treating depression and other mental illnesses in general. According to mental health experts, effective medications and treatments are available for even the most severe cases of depression. Nonetheless, the approach to finding which remedy will succeed can be a frustrating experience and can lead to a delay in a patient's recovery. Depression is currently treated with both medication and therapy, but there's still room for improvement, according to Dr. Winston Chung, a psychiatrist at the Sutter Pacific Medical Foundation, who specializes in mental and mood disorders. Chung also said that researchers need to better understand the biology of mental health issues in order to reduce the stigma and produce more accurate treatment. If you or a student in need is looking for a campus resource, you may seek the Dominican University's counseling service by calling 415-485-3258. These appointments are free to all students, available Monday through Friday, and are completely confidential. That number was 415-485-3258. Along with the campus resource, there are many resources in the San Francisco Bay Area for anyone suffering from depression or suicidal thoughts. The Suicide Prevention Crisis Line, 800-273-8255. The San Francisco General Hospital Psychiatric Emergency Services can be called at 415-206-8125. The San Francisco Suicide Prevention 24-Hour Hotline can be reached at 415-781-0500. Thanks for listening.
All right, welcome back to radio.dominican.edu. You are still listening to Hollywood Soup, and I am Dizzy D. So I'm going to move on to my next segment, True or False. I'm going to be sharing some facts. Some are true and some are false. So here's my first one. Is Bridesmaids star Melissa McCarthy and former The View co-host Jenny McCarthy sisters? This is false, but they are actually cousins. Jenny McCarthy was born in Evergreen Park, Illinois, and Melissa McCarthy was born in Plainfield, Illinois. And though she actually was raised on a farm, and in 1997, Melissa McCarthy made her first television debut in an episode of Jenny on NBC with her cousin Jenny McCarthy. I had no idea that was true, and I guess it's been out for a while, so I guess I've been in the dark on that one. But moving on, did Taylor Momsen? Was she a final three contestant for the role of Hannah Montana? This is true. Taylor Momsen was only 9 years old when auditioning for the role, but we all know that Miley Cyrus starred as Hannah Montana, and I am so glad that Miley got casted for Hannah Montana because, as I talked about last week, I love Hannah Montana. Well, I love Miley Cyrus, and that's how I fell in love with her, was through Hannah Montana, because growing up, I watched it all the time, and I truly don't think I would have liked the show as much if Taylor got the part. But having said that, I think Taylor Momsen did a great job on Gossip Girl, which is one of my all-time favorite shows. So, keeping it in the Gossip Girl family, did Blake Lively and Penn Badgley know each other before the TV show Gossip Girl? This is true. They were actually introduced at the age of 11 when Blake's mom was Penn's acting coach. And being on Gossip Girl for 6 seasons, they had a on and off-camera relationship. But we all know that Blake Lively is now happily married to Ryan Reynolds. And as much as I wanted Blake and Penn to end up together in real life, Blake and Ryan make one hot couple, so I cannot complain there. But moving on, did Jennifer Lawrence earn her SAG card after portraying a pregnant teenager for the commercial for MTV's 16 and Pregnant? This is false, but she actually happens to have gotten her SAG card for acting as a spoiled rich teen for the commercial of MTV's My Super Sweet 16. And she was only 14 years old, which was 9 years ago. And I honestly had no idea this was true. So when I found out, I looked up the commercial. And if you haven't seen it, search Jennifer Lawrence, My Super Sweet 16. That's a mouthful there. But it's seriously so funny. She announced at the 2013 SAG Awards when she got an award for Best Actress for Silver Linings Playbook that she would like to thank MTV and explained how she did this promo. And she looked so young in the commercial. It's so corny and hilarious. I found it so funny because I used to actually watch My Super Sweet 16 all the time. So the fact that she made the commercial was so funny. And Jennifer Lawrence is one of my favorite actresses. So I just thought it was funny that she started out that way. So, moving on from that, was Jerry Springer the mayor of Cincinnati? This is true. Jerry Springer was elected as councilman in 1971 and resigned in 1974 after admitting that he hired a prostitute. And he made his political campaign around honesty, because this scandal kind of helped his platform, which fundamentally got him reelected as mayor of the city, and he served 2 terms. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Moving on, is it true that Rihanna appeared on the soap opera Days of Our Lives? This is false. She actually appeared in 2006 on the soap opera All of My Children. And she performed her hit single SOS, and she was only 18 years old at the time when she made this appearance. But about a year after that, or a year before that, Rihanna came into the music industry with her song Pond Day Replay on her album Music of the Sun. And now Rihanna has totally grown up being in the spotlight, and she is still releasing so many hit songs. It's crazy that it's only been that short a time because she's so famous now. It kind of just reminds me of myself growing up, because I totally remember her music being out in middle school and high school, and it's just really cool to watch her grow as an artist. So speaking of another artist, did Alicia Keys start out acting and play Rudy's friend on The Cosby Show? This was so true, and Alicia Keys was only 4 years old, and she stepped in front of the camera and was filmed on Bill Cosby's knee bouncing around and basically challenging her with this game. I don't know if you remember the episode, but she mentioned how great of a memory it was for her, and it was extra fun because she won the competition. So the episode I'm talking about was when Rudy, the youngest daughter of their family, the Huxtables, she has a sleepover with like 7 kids, I think, and they play this game, and Bill Cosby, you know, is sitting down, and each kid comes up on his lap and sits on one of his knees, and he basically just bounces them around and see if they fall off or not. But in the episode, Alicia Keys stays on for the longest amount of time, so she takes pride in that. But I honestly had no idea it was Alicia Keys at all because she has this afro and I couldn't even recognize her. And I watched that. I didn't watch the full episode. I watched the clip back and it was really funny. I had no idea it was her. But moving on, does Shailene Woodley suffer from scoliosis? This is actually true. I didn't know this, but if you don't know what scoliosis is, it's the curvature of the spine. And she was actually diagnosed when she was 15 years old. And she decided to go to the doctors after one day she was going swimming with her friends. And one of her friends commented to her and said, "Your spine kind of looks weird." And because often, you know, your spine is straight, but when you have scoliosis, it's in the shape of an S or a C from when you're looking at the back. And she went to the doctor and the doctor said that her spine was at a 38 degree curve, but she didn't need surgery because usually with a 45 degree curve that you would be a candidate for surgery. But Shailene Woodley had to wear a brace from her chest to her waist, and she had to wear that for 18 hours a day for 2 years. But her treatment was successful, and now she is totally growing as an actress. She's everywhere now. So, but speaking of another actress, did Drew Barrymore host Saturday Night Live when she was 8 years old? This is false. Drew Barrymore was actually 7 years old when she first hosted Saturday Night Live, and she actually holds the title for the youngest person to ever host the show. And I haven't seen this episode of Saturday Night Live. I tried looking it up, but I couldn't find it. But I'm sure she was great on the show because she was a super funny little kid. And there was a couple videos on YouTube where she talks. She's on talk shows and she's talking, you know, and she is just a super cute and funny little girl. And she actually has hosted Saturday Night Live a total of 6 times, which is the leading female who has hosted the show that many amount of times. She's hosted it the most. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then my last question for the day was, is Beyoncé allergic to her own perfume? This is false. She actually is allergic to regular perfume, but she has made 8 different colognes and perfumes, but each one of them is chemically altered so that she can wear them because she's allergic to other perfumes. So I thought that was pretty cool. So those are all my true or false stories I have for the week. After this short break, I will be talking about I'll be doing my next segment called Tunes Talk, and I'll be talking about the song Shake It Off by Taylor Swift. So stay tuned on Penguin Radio, and here it is.
Got nothing in my brain. That's what people say. Mm-hmm. That's what people say. Mm-hmm. I go on too many dates, but I can't make them stay. At least that's what people say.
God, but I'm just gonna shake. And to the fella over there with the hella good hair, won't you come on over, baby, we can shake, shake, shake. Yeah. Cause the players wanna play, 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 play.
Welcome back to Hollywood Soup on radio.dominican.edu. This is Dizzy D, and now I'm going to jump into my third segment, Tunes Talk. So, you just heard the song Shake It Off by Taylor Swift, and I'm assuming that you've heard it before because this song is currently number 2 on iTunes, and it is all over the radio. But Taylor Swift is no stranger to the Billboard charts, being her 22nd single to debut at number 1. And I'm sure you all know who Taylor Swift is because she's everywhere, like I already said. But she is an American singer-songwriter who was, at 14 years old, moved to Nashville, Tennessee to pursue her music career. She originally established herself being a country music artist, but she is now making her transition to pop. And she has actually won 7 Grammy Awards, 15 American Music Awards, 11 CMA Awards, 7 Academy of Country Music Awards, and 12 Billboard Music Awards. She has her shelf full. So Shake It Off is going to be on Taylor Swift's 5th album, 1989, which is supposed to be released on October 27th, 2014. It's an upbeat pop song. So the first time that I heard this song, she was performing it at the MTV VMAs, and I really didn't care for the performance at all, but she had probably like 50 guys on stage all in tuxedos, and they were kind of over Taylor Swift on an aerial view, and then she appears, and then she just reaches for the camera, dramatic. And at one point, well, at this point, the beginning, I knew I wasn't gonna like the song because I don't know, I'm not a huge Taylor Swift fan or anything, but she looked great, no doubt about it. She had this beaded, sparkly, silver, metallic crop top and shorts on that matched, and she looked amazing. She had red lipstick on that really made it pop, and I really like her short hair. I don't know, she's rocking it. I really like her short hair, but I think it makes her look older and more mature, but still a little edgy, you know? So she had the look going for her, but I thought all of the dancers, the male dancers, were kind of unnecessary. There were just so many of them, and I don't know it's just weird to me. I mean, I guess it was fine, like, it, I don't know if it really added anything to her performance, though. Maybe it did because she's not that great of a dancer, so I guess it added that. But anyways, when the music started and she sang, she would walk across the stage and the whole thing just looked awkward to me. I just don't like when she moves because she's not that coordinated, I don't think. And I don't know, it's just weird to me. She just looks unnatural. And then she started shaking her hips, and at this time I just had about enough of it because I couldn't watch it anymore, because she just was it was just too much. It looked like she was trying to force it, and I don't know, it's just weird to me. But I continued to watch because I wanted to see what else that she would do. But towards, you know, the bridge, she climbs onto this big 1989 neon sign that's on stage, and it's really tall, and she climbed on it, and this part is totally unnecessary, but she, you know, dances a little bit on it, and then, like, towards, not quite when the bridge happens, but right before the bridge, she, like, looks down, and all the male dancers are, like, waiting to catch her, and she just kind of looks down, and she's like, no. And then she goes back down, and she just belts this note that was, she made it dramatic, that's one thing, but I don't know if she really needed to act out the part, because she's not that great of an actress, if you ask me. But anyways, I thought it was cool that the 1989 represented her album title, which was kind of cool, but I don't know, it was just kind of weird, but I liked when she belted out that note, that was cool, but I don't know. And then I don't know if you guys have seen the music video, but I watched the music video because I was curious, because I knew I was going to talk about the song today. So I watched the music video, and in the very beginning, she is in line at a ballet bar with other girls, and when she starts singing, she looked like she had a lisp. It was, I don't know if any of you noticed that, but it looked like she had a lisp to me. It was weird. I don't know. But she just, it changed into like a bunch of different scenes. And one, she was wearing baggy like hip hop clothes with a stereo on her shoulder. And then she had her ballet outfit on. There was two different ballet ones. There was the beginning one. She was just in a, I think it was a shirt and shorts, maybe it was a Lady Tartard, I can't remember. But, and then she had this big, like, you know, Black Swan, like the big tutus, but hers was white, I think. But it was something like that. And then she switches to, you know, other outfits. There's one, there's a gold jumpsuit. There's one where she's in gray shorts and a tank top. There's a gymnastics outfit, a cheerleading uniform, and then there's this other outfit that she has short jean shorts on and a leopard print top. But then she starts shaking again, and then I just got uncomfortable because she can't shake it, you know. And but the only part that I could really take her seriously in this music video is when she's singing the chorus, and she's in this all black outfit with the red lipstick again, and her hair looks so good. I can't get over it. But her, you know, her hair is short and straight, and the bangs look a little thicker. But she looked amazing. And the band is in the background, and she's not acting in this part, which I thought was really cool. She was just singing, and that's what I like when she just sings and acts normal. But anyways, I don't know. There's this one part in the music video where I don't see why there needs to be this in the video. There was twerking in the music video, and I don't see Taylor Swift as much of a twerker. I don't think she knows how to twerk. I don't think she has the ability to twerk, because she doesn't even have the ability to shake her hips. So I don't know if she would be able to do that style of dancing, but it was just weird. Like, I don't know, I'm not against twerking or anything, but it's just such a poppy song. It's not like Anaconda by Nicki Minaj. You know what I mean? And I don't see why she thought it would be beneficial to put twerking in this music video. I don't know. So basically, I have no idea what impression she was trying to get out of that in the music video. And I don't really know how it relates to her song at all. But I mean, I don't really understand the music video at all. But even though I'm not a huge Taylor Swift fan, there's definitely artists that I care for more than I care for Taylor Swift. But nevertheless, I think the song has a great meaning behind it. Though, originally, I thought this song was so annoying. And when, okay, so I wanted to talk about this song because currently when I was planning my show, it was number one on the iTunes charts. And I was going to talk really badly about it and say probably horrible things about it. But then I really listened to the song more. And listening to the actual words, I think this song is actually really inspirational. And I think it basically means that no matter if people are talking about you or saying mean things about you, you should just shake it off and not worry about it, because you know who you truly are and no one else can tell you who you want to be or what to be or anything like that. So now when I hear this on the radio, I'm not going to turn it off, because I just want to listen to the words and be inspired and not think about the music video, because that is just too awkward for me. But that was my segment, Tunes Talk. And when I come back, I will go into my last segment, The Dirty Deets. So we will be back after this message on radio.dominican.edu.
Baby boy, the prince. Meantime, old Cass Monroe. Extreme entertainment. Ooh,
this is the way I live. Little boy still pushing big bills. I stack my money.
You're on a Bosco break. Thanks for listening. At many universities, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender community is a visible and valued part of campus life. You are likely to find more resources, more programs, and a much wider dating pool. Students who are struggling or questioning their identity often find it easier to explore and accept who they are in college. Most schools have a dedicated club, and many offer a major or minor in LGBT studies. Despite these efforts, students who are or are perceived to be a member of the LGBT community still face harsh realities in some schools. Luckily, Dominican is not one of those campuses. Most Dominican students report that they would consider the DU campus LGBT-friendly and a welcoming place to all students. One of Dominican students, Ariana Fleming, has created a club on campus dedicated to celebrating diversity, promoting acceptance, advocating equality, and providing community. The club has been named the Pride Club, people respecting identity, dignity, and equality. Pride Club meets with purposes as diverse as its membership, which is inclusive to any sexuality, gender, or self-identification. The club gathers Thursday nights at 8 p.m. with the goal of allowing students to make connections, find comfort in a similar community, and spread awareness about LGBT issues. Pride believes in the power of education as a means of combating widespread hatred against the LGBT community, and also works to offer a safe space for all individuals to gain support and be heard. Outside of Pride, there aren't a lot of open discussions about the issue. Universities are places of learning and also numerous micro-societies. The environment of a university has a direct impact on how well students learn, as well as how they interact with each other. As a freshman, Fleming felt isolated and depressed. In time, her loneliness began to take a toll on her schoolwork and affected the future of her career at Dominican. Fleming expressed, "It's unfair for students to feel unsafe and uncomfortable being who they are. I felt deep in my heart that creating the club needed to happen." The club began when she decided that she did not want another person feeling as alone as she did her freshman year. She told all of her friends to tell everyone they knew to meet the next day for the first official Pride Club meeting. Fleming welcomes all to join and reaches out to the student body by expressing, "We're here if you need us, but there's no pressure to come. The club is anonymous, so people who don't want to be identified or associated will not be." Professors work hard to ensure their classes are welcoming atmospheres in which students feel valued. According to Tolerance.org, creating a supportive environment for LGBT students improves educational outcomes for all students, not just those who may identify as LGBT. The Dean of Students at Dominican University, Paul Rocanello, says that issues of sexuality are one of, if not the biggest issue of diversity on college campuses. Young adults who are trying to figure out who they are should have spaces where students can feel safe and supported. We should be supporting 100%, and all resources on campus are willing to have an open relationship with students to figure out what support is needed. There is still work to be done to fix the gay stereotype, but Dominican prides itself on the efforts it makes to protect the rights of the LGBT community, to be safe and visible while embracing their identity rather than being belittled or erased. Thanks for listening. This is radio.dominican.edu.
You are still listening to Hollywood Soup on Penguin Radio. This is Dizzy D, and for my last segment for the day is The Dirty Deets. The Dirty Deets is your source of entertainment gossip from all over Hollywood, so let's get started. So today I wanted to do things a little differently because this week is the finale of one of my favorite episodes, or not my favorite episode, my favorite show, the final episode, is this week, so I wanted to talk about that for sure, but I wanted to give you a little update of what's happening around Hollywood and what went on this weekend. So, first things first, this didn't happen in Hollywood, but Kendall Jenner is taking over Milan Fashion Week. She walked the runway for Dolce & Gabbana, Fendi, Ports 1961, and Bottega Veneta. It's hard to believe that this 18-year-old girl is only starting her supermodel career, and I can't wait to see where she goes from here because she has so much of her life left, and it's going to be interesting to see where she goes. So next, I have somewhat of a throwback. Hilary Duff, who first starred in Lizzie McGuire, has admitted that she would love to do a reunion show, and this Disney Channel hit series was, and it ended in 2004, but I hope none of you have forgotten it. Lizzie McGuire used to be one of my favorite shows. I used to watch it all the time, and nothing is set in stone or anything, but this seriously needs to happen because Lizzie, Gordo, and Miranda need to have a reunion. This needs to happen. But now, going into another TV show, allegedly, Charlie Sheen might be returning to the TV show Two and a Half Men. Apparently, Charlie Sheen and the creative team of Two and a Half Men have talked about him coming back for the season finale. So that airs October 30th. So we'll see what happens with that. But now, I want to talk about one of my favorite TV shows in the whole entire world. I'm so excited to talk about this because it breaks my heart because this show only airs once a year, the beginning of summer until the end of summer, and now it's ending and I'm so sad. But the Big Brother 16 finale is this Wednesday, and this season flew by, like all of them. I just wish it could be on all year round because it is so good. But if you have no idea what I'm talking about, I will explain to you because Big Brother is a very confusing show, and it is especially confusing to someone who has never seen the show before. So this is a reality show, and a group of people usually ranging from 12 to 16 people are put into this house for about three months. And the prize, if you win the game, is $500,000, and the runner-up gets $50,000. So how do you win Big Brother? It's pretty simple. You have to be the last person standing in the house. So all the housemates play in competitions every week, and first, they play in a competition called the Head of Household Competition, and it's HOH for short, so I might be referencing that throughout telling you, explaining the game, but this ensures that whoever wins will be completely safe for the week. But the ultimate saying in Big Brother is expect the unexpected, and this season had a very crazy twist that has never been done before. So there are actually two heads of households every week, and it was a lot. So, okay, what do heads of household do? Well, they nominate two people for eviction so that every week one person will go home and the other house gets guests vote between those two who they want to be sent home. But since this season there was two HOHs, they would both nominate two house guests for eviction. So they had four people that were nominated. So they created a new competition called Battle of the Block. And these the two pairs of house guests would play against each other according to who nominated them, and whatever team won would be able to take themselves off the block to, for them to guarantee safety for themselves, leaving the other two people that lost the competition would still be on the block. Okay, I hope I have everybody's minds not confused. Okay, but this doesn't mean that those two will go home. There is another competition to be played called the Power of Veto. And in this competition, the two nominated house guests, the head of household, and three other house guests selected upon random draw are eligible to play. So whoever wins this competition has the power to take one of the nominated house guests off the block, leaving the HOH to put someone up in replacement. So whoever is nominated after the power of veto ceremony has a chance of going home. So this season, someone who was HOH at the beginning of the week could have gone home because the Battle of the Block competition could left them. Well, okay. So whoever won the Battle of the Block competition, whatever team won, the HOH that nominated them would have been dethroned, which they were not HOH anymore. So if someone won the Power of Veto competition, the other HOH could put them on the block. Do you get that? Does that make sense? I hope it does. But anyway, so that's pretty much the gist of it. So the rest of the household, besides the HOH and the two nominees, get to vote and send whoever they want home. Usually, I'll get to it. But anyway, so that's the gist of the game. And if you do watch the show, you know that it was a very eventful season, as always. So, but I mean, in the beginning, we all think that it's not going to be a good season because it won't compare to last season, like the season before last. But I really didn't like last season, so I was praying that this season would be good. And it was so good. I loved watching the season. So one major thing that happened this season was Ariana Grande's brother, Frankie, was on the show. And throughout the season, I started to fall in love with him because he's Ariana Grande's sister. I love Ariana Grande, but I started to fall in love with Frankie and not just the title of Ariana Grande's sister. I mean, brother. He's a brother. When he first started the game and, well, when he went into the house, he didn't tell the truth. He told everybody that he was from New York. He was on Broadway, blah, blah, blah. But he didn't say that he was Ariana Grande's sister because he thought he would have a disadvantage playing the game, because throughout the game you make a lot of alliances and you form groups and you know people stab each other in the back. It's just a lot of drama in this game, which I love. And because there's a lot of alliances, I think he just didn't want to not be included because he was Ariana Grande's sister or brother. I keep saying sister, but he's brother. Anyways, but, you know, I have this saying that I truly can trust someone if I think I would trust them in the Big Brother house. Because if I was in the Big Brother house, I would be very cautious about who I trusted, because people just tell each other everything that's not true. And it's so good. Like, if you haven't watched it, you need to watch it. But anyway, so initially, I think that's what Frankie was worried about, not having people trust him because he was already semi-famous, you know. But anyways, the reason I liked Frankie throughout the show so much is because he was always so funny and he made me laugh and he was friends with everyone. But this didn't necessarily mean that I wanted him to win, because I didn't think it was really fair, because he's already Ariana Grande's sister. He doesn't need the money, you know what I mean? But his alliance, well, the people he worked with started not really trusting him, and he was almost sent home. But then he revealed this big secret that he was Ariana Grande's brother and that he was playing for charity. But spoiler alert, if you haven't watched it and you want to watch it, this was a week ago, but he ended up getting evicted last week and he made it to the final five. But I want to talk about someone else in the house now. His name is Zach. And first of all, when the season first started, I hated Zach. I hated him so much. He was just really loud and annoying. He was just a fratty boy who just said whatever just came out of his mouth, basically. It was just really obnoxious. And he ended up being probably one of my favorite people to watch on the show because he was just so entertaining and he made the show so funny. And he just was never scared to tell it like it is. And he created so much drama in the house that really made a good show. And I mean, I don't agree with what he did, but it just made it entertaining and I liked it. So when he got evicted, I was so sad just because I didn't think it was going to be as entertaining without him. But I mean, it was, but I just loved him in the house. He was just a really good, funny person to have. But the other thing I loved about him was his relationship with Frankie. And for the record, Frankie's gay and Zach is straight, but they had such a weird relationship and I just loved it. I loved it. They would just cuddle with each other and tightly embrace each other. And I don't know, I just loved it. And they had a couple named Zanky. And I wish the two of them would have their own reality show because their friendship just makes me happy and just melts my heart. Or warms my heart. Is that the saying? It just warms my heart and I just want to cry because it makes me so happy. But anyways, this doesn't mean there hasn't been true showmances throughout the years and over the season. And what a showmance is when two people in the house fall in love or get, you know, flirty or whatever. But this season, there was Nicole and Hayden. And Nicole was kind of the nerdy girl who's shy and awkward. And Hayden is a SoCal boy with the long blonde hair and is super goofy. But the two of them really connected with each other and they didn't make it a huge deal in the house. It was more hidden. It was more of a hidden love. And their relationship really progressed in the jury house. And I'll explain what the jury house is in a second. But now they're not really hiding their relationship at all. But even on this season, former house guests Jeff and Jordan, who were in a showmance on their season, got engaged on the show this season. And it was super cute because they met in the house and they've been together for like 5 years and they're just such a cute couple. They're just perfect. They're the perfect humans. Like, I can't explain it. But anyways, there have also been a couple marriages between Big Brother showmances, like Brandon Villegas and Rachel Riley, and also Danielle Donato and Dominic Briones. So that's that. Maybe Hayden and Nicole get married. We'll see. They live on other sides of the country, so it might be a little tricky, but we'll see. And so, like I said before, the finale is this week. It's on Wednesday. And the final three house guests are in the house right now. And it's between Victoria, Cody, and Derek. And they have to play in three HOH competitions. And whoever wins two out of the three competitions gets the choice to pick between the other two house guests who will sit next to them in the finale. And so whoever is not picked will join with the other eight jury members. And the jury members are the house guests who have gotten evicted except for the first five. So after the first five evicted house guests, you go into the jury house and you move into the jury house and they are the deciding factor who wins Big Brother. Okay, so if Derek wins, okay, if you watch the show, if Derek wins, if he doesn't win, I'm going to be really, really mad because he is the only person that I really respect his game because he's played the game extremely well. I think he's probably played one of the best games in Big Brother history, to be honest, but he has, first off, never been nominated, which is an outstanding accomplishment, and he's such a good manipulator. He pretty much told everyone what to do and they did it and he just didn't get any blood on his hands, but he basically had an alliance with every single person in the house, and the fact that he didn't get caught doing that is amazing to me. And the only thing that worries me with this is that he pretty much backstabbed every person in the jury house because he had something to do with their eviction, and they get to see the film once they are evicted. They get to see all of it happen. So I don't know. Either way, I feel like he will win, just because I feel like everyone would respect his game nevertheless. But if anyone deserves to win, it's him, because Victoria hasn't won any competition. She's probably won like one, I think. And then Cody, I don't know, he just kind of sits behind Derek and is kind of just his Robin. You know, Derek's Batman and he's Robin. So I don't know, he's just kind of the sidekick that doesn't really do anything. And I really think Derek should win, because he has a family. He has a wife and a kid, and whoever sits next to them is going to win $50,000. I would not complain with that. But, I mean, there's a title. So, I mean, I really hope Derek wins. So, I mean, if you don't watch the show, you should definitely watch next season. It's super confusing. I probably just confused all of you. But I really hope you watch it, because it's a great show. And little side note, I got knee surgery this summer, and I follow a couple of former house guests on Instagram and Twitter and stuff. And on Instagram, the runner-up from last year, her name's Gina Marie Zimmerman, and she posted, I literally got my surgery that day. She posts a picture of her knee, and she goes, "Oh, getting knee surgery next month, wish me luck, blah, blah, blah." And she has like 100,000 followers on Instagram. And I was on pain meds, and I was like, I'm going to comment on her pic. Why not? And so I comment on it. I was like, "Oh, just got ACL and meniscus surgery today. You'll do great," like blah, blah, blah. She literally, I'm not kidding, she goes on my Instagram, comments on my picture that I posted in the hospital, and she goes, "Oh, you'll do great. Have a great recovery, blah, blah, blah." And I was like, asked my mom. I was crying. I was bawling in my bed. I was like, "Oh my God, she commented back on my picture." And we're like talking over Instagram, and she's like, "Oh my God, we should Skype when I get my surgery, blah, blah, blah." That never happened. But it was just so funny. And they're so famous to me. Like, I mean, there's Kim Kardashian, but then there's Big Brother. I want to be on Big Brother one day after I graduate from Dominican. This is going to be a thing. I'm going to be on Big Brother. Take notes. Quote me on that. Okay, well, I hope you all enjoyed this week's show. So tune in next Monday at 3 to hear who will be going deep in the boiling water next week on Hollywood Soup with Dizzy D on Penguin Radio. Have a good rest of your week, and thank you for listening.
Don't you think that it's boring how people talk?